realize their dreams is one of the goals of marriage. We want to know what the other person wants in their life, says Justine, referring to herself and her husband Michael. But she could just as well be talking for all emotionally intelligent couples. In happy marriages, partners incorporate each other's goals into their concept of what their marriage is about. These goals can be as concrete as wanting to live in a certain kind of house or to get a certain academic degree. But they can also be intangible, such as wanting to feel safe or wanting to view life as a grand adventure. Shelley wants to go to college. Malcolm's hefty paycheck allows her to do that. But he wants to quit his high-pressure marketing job because his dream is to be his own boss and build boats. In a happy marriage, neither spouse insists or attempts to manipulate the other into giving up their dream. They work it out as a team. They fully take into account each other's wishes and desires. Maybe Malcolm decides to keep at the grind till Shelley finishes school. Maybe Shelley studies part-time, or suspends her studies for an agreed-upon length of time. Maybe practicality demands that one or both of their dreams be put on hold for a while. Whatever they decide to do isn't really the issue. The point is that their concept of their marriage incorporates supporting both of these dreams. The way they go about making such decisions, with mutual respect for and acknowledgement of each other's aspirations, is part of what makes their marriage meaningful to them. A horse named Daphne. When either spouse doesn't fully appreciate the importance of supporting his or her partner's dreams, gridlock is almost inevitable. That was the root cause of the severe marital problems between Ed and Luann, a Seattle couple who were interviewed in my love lab for Dateline NBC. When Ed and Luann were in the lab together, you could see that their fondness and affection were still there. But they were experiencing enormous stress over Daphne, Luann's 9-year-old horse, which she often competed with in horse shows. Before they were married, Ed was very taken with Daphne. But now that he was confronted with the monthly bills for her care and maintenance, she became a source of tension between him and his wife. He wanted Luann to sell the horse so that they could save money. The more he and Luann argued over selling Daphne, the more he feared deep down that she cared for the horse more than she did for him and their marriage. The couple talked out this problem in 3 15-minute sessions, snippets of which were aired on the show. In between those sessions, my team and I coached them, using the sorts of techniques you'll find in this chapter. Luann was told not to give up on her dream and to make sure that Ed understood that he came first in her heart. I helped Ed understand that helping Luann realize her dream to compete in horse shows with Daphne was part of his role as her spouse. He also needed to accept Luann's influence when it came to making financial decisions. By the end of the 3 sessions, Ed and Luann had made a major leap forward in their marriage. When Ed told her he would support her decision to keep Daphne, her wide smile lit up the screen. Today, 2.5 years later, Ed and Luann are happily married. Luann has sold Daphne, though she still visits her, in order to lease a younger horse. She continues to compete in horse shows, and Ed continues to support her right to do so. When dreams are hidden. For Ed and Luann, it was apparent that a dream was the root cause of their conflict. The challenge was to respect the dream and each other's needs. But for many couples, the dream that is at the core of the conflict is not so obvious. Only by uncovering this dream can the couple get out of gridlock. Take the case of Catherine and Jeff. They were happily married until Catherine became pregnant. Suddenly, it seemed to Jeff, her Catholic faith took on a much more central role in her life. He himself was an agnostic. When he found out that she had been talking with her father about having the baby baptized, he was livid. He did not want his child to have any kind of formal religious instruction. By the time Catherine and Jeff discussed this conflict in my lab, they had clearly become gridlocked. I could tell that their marriage was in serious danger because they were emotionally distant from each other. Even while discussing the highly personal issues of faith and family, they didn't raise their voices, cry, smile, or touch each other. They were able to talk intellectually about their difference of opinion, but they were emotionally disengaged. And since their problem was really an emotional one, concerning their feelings about families, parenthood, and religion, no amount of careful intellectual analysis would be able to resolve it. At their next session, I suggested that instead of trying to solve the issue, They should just listen to each other talk about what religion symbolized to them. This was the only way to get to the hidden dreams that were fueling the conflict. Catherine went first. She described how her beliefs had carried her through very hard times. Her parents went through a rancorous divorce. For 10 years, her father had no contact with the family. Her mother became so depressed that Catherine couldn't depend on her. She felt completely unloved and alone until she turned to the church, which embraced her. Not only did she feel a kinship with her fellow worshipers, but she felt comforted by prayer. When all the chips were down, feeling God's love brought her deep comfort. Catherine started crying as she remembered those hard times and the solace she found in religion. Jeff explained that he had been an agnostic his entire life. In contrast to Catherine's dysfunctional family, his was very strong and loving. When he went through hard times, he always turned to his parents. He wanted his child to feel the same trust in him and Catherine. He feared that if their son was indoctrinated into the church, this would interfere with that bond. The child would be trained to turn to God instead of his parents. Jeff and Catherine had opposing dreams. He envisioned them as a happy family that would supply all the love and support their children needed. He saw religion as a threat to their deep connection. Catherine viewed religion as a vital support system that she wanted to ensure was there for her children. Once these dreams were discussed openly, the mood in the room changed dramatically. Jeff told Catherine that he loved her. It finally sank into him that her desire to baptize their baby came out of her deep love for their child, for his child. He realized it made perfect sense that out of this love, she wanted to protect the baby from ever feeling the pain she had experienced. This helped him reconnect with his own deep feelings for Catherine, which had gotten buried under all of the bitterness and anger. In the first session, no emotion had passed between the couple. But this time, you could see the compassion on Jeff's face as he listened to his wife recount her childhood. When she cried, he handed her tissues and encouraged her to keep talking. Catherine listened just as intently to his side of the story. Now that the real issues were out in the open, they were able to talk about how they could raise their son in a way that honored both their visions. Jeff told her he wouldn't oppose the baptism. He himself would always be agnostic, but it was okay with him if the child received rudimentary training in Catholicism. However, he still opposed intensive religious study because he feared the church might impose ideas on the child. Catherine was able to accept this compromise. Deep issues like these are unlikely to be declawed in just one session. But Jeff and Catherine made an important first step. They turned toward each other and acknowledged with respect each other's dreams for their child. They agreed to seek further counseling to build on the success of the lab session. Will this issue ever go away or be resolved in their marriage? Probably not. But they have begun to learn to live with it peacefully. If you've reached gridlock on any issue in your marriage, big or small, the first step is to identify which dream or dreams are fueling the conflict. One good indicator that you're wrestling with a hidden dream is that you see your spouse as being the sole source of the marital problem. If you find yourself saying, for example, that the problem is simply that he is a slob or she is just irresponsible or overly demanding, that's a sign of a hidden dream. It may indicate that you don't see your part in creating the conflict because it has been hidden from view. Uncovering a hidden dream is a challenge. The dream is unlikely to emerge until you feel that your marriage is a safe place to talk about it. That's why it's important to begin by working on my first three principles outlined in chapters 3, 4, and 5 in order to strengthen your friendship with your mate. Keep working on your unresolvable conflicts. Couples who are demanding of their marriage are more likely to have deeply satisfying unions than those who lower their expectations. You may find that when you first begin to recognize and acknowledge your dreams, the problem between you and your spouse seems to get worse rather than better. Be patient. Acknowledging and advocating for your dreams in a marriage is not easy. The very nature of gridlock means that your dream and your spouse's appear to be in opposition. So you both become deeply entrenched in your positions and fear accepting each other's influence and yielding. Once you're ready to overcome gridlock, here's how to proceed. Step 1. Become a dream detective. Often, deeply personal dreams go unspoken or underground after marriage because we assume they must in order to make the relationship work. It's common for both partners not to feel entitled to their complaints. They may see their own desires as childish or impractical. But such labels don't change the fact that the dream is something you long for, and if the marriage doesn't honor it, conflict will almost inevitably ensue. In other words, when you adjust to marriage by burying a dream, it just resurfaces in disguised form, as a gridlocked conflict. Exercise 1. Detecting dreams. This exercise will give you plenty of practice in uncovering hidden dreams without at first focusing on your own marriage. What follows are 6 examples of common gridlocked conflicts. Listen to each one and think about what dreams may be hidden inside each partner's perspective. Make up a brief story or narrative that explains the husband's dream and his position, then do the same for the wife. In each case, imagine that this is your position and that it is very hard for you to yield. Think of what your position means to you and where this dream may come from in your past. Imagining other people's dreams will help you unlock the door to those causing gridlock in your own marriage. This is a creative exercise that has no right or wrong answers. To get you started, we've included the suggested dreams and stories for the first 2 couples. For the rest of the couples, you'll hear this material in a few minutes. Couple 1. Husband, I think my wife is too neat and tidy. I find myself constantly trying to find things after she has cleaned up. I think she is being inconsiderate and overly controlling, and I'm tired of it. My dreams within this conflict might be, my parents were very strict disciplinarians. They saw any disagreement with them as insubordination. As a result, I became somewhat of a rebel. I freely admit that I have a problem with authority, and that's why I decided to build my own business. My dream is to have a home where I can be myself, and that means not following any rigid set of rules. I want my kids to challenge authority and think for themselves, not simply learn to be obedient. I myself want to be free in my home, including being sloppy at times. Wife, I like a certain amount of order and neatness in our home. I find myself constantly cleaning up my husband's messes. I think he is being inconsiderate, and I'm tired of this. My dreams within this conflict might be, I grew up in a totally chaotic home. There was nothing I could count on as a child. I never knew who was driving me to school or picking me up. My mom would sometimes forget to pick me up, and I hated her for that sometimes. Then I would get home, and there would often be no dinner and no clean clothes. It fell on my shoulders to create all the order and sense of responsibility for my younger sibs. I resented having to do all that. My dream is to provide a much healthier family environment for my kids and family. To me, order means predictability, security, and peacefulness. I want that for my kids. When the house is a mess, it takes me back to the chaos of my youth. Couple 2. Husband, my wife is very emotional and claims that I am far too unemotional. This difference between us makes me feel that she is overreactive and out of control at times, perhaps overly sensitive. I think that being rational is usually the best approach to strong emotional situations, not getting more emotional. My wife claims that I am hard to read and too distant. My dreams within this conflict might be, I grew up in a family where everyone was a debater. We loved to argue with one another. My dad always asked a question, challenged me, and then took a contrary position to mine. Then the debate was on. It was no holds barred, and we all loved it. But getting emotional was illegal in this debating contest. Once someone got emotional, the argument was over. So staying in emotional control was highly prized in my family. It still is. So maybe I should be more emotional, but it's not in my makeup. My dream is to be strong. I think of being emotional as a weakness. Wife, I am a very emotional person, and my husband is far too unemotional. This difference between us makes me feel that my partner is cold and fake at times, not really present. Many times I have no idea what he is feeling. I am frustrated by this difference between us. My dreams within this conflict might be, I am just an emotional person and that's all there is to it. I think that's what life is all about, feeling things, being in contact, responding. That's what responsible ought to mean. Responsible, or able to respond. That's the highest value for me. I respond to everything around me. To great art, to architecture, to children, to puppies, to competition in athletics, to sad movies, to everything. To be emotional just means being alive. This is the way I was raised, and I'm glad. My dream is to share my emotions with the person I love. If I can't, the marriage is doomed to seem dead, fake, and lonely. Couple 3. Husband. My wife is overly jealous, especially at parties. I think that social occasions are a time to meet new people, which I find very interesting. But my wife gets clingy and shy. She claims that I flirt with other women at parties, but this isn't true at all. I find the accusations insulting, and it makes me angry. I don't know how to reassure my wife, and I'm tired of not being trusted. My dreams within this conflict might be... Wife. At parties and other places, my husband looks at other women and acts flirtatious. I find this upsetting and demeaning. I brought this up repeatedly, but cannot get him to stop. My dreams within this conflict might be... Couple 4. Wife. My husband likes to have sex much more often than I do. I don't know what to do when he keeps approaching me for sexual intimacy. I don't know how to say no in a gentle way. This pattern makes me feel like an ogre. I don't know how to deal with this. My dreams within this conflict might be... Husband. I like to have sex much more often than my wife. I keep getting my feelings hurt when she turns me down. This pattern makes me feel unattractive and unwanted. I don't know how to deal with this. My dreams within this conflict might be... Couple 5. Wife. I think that my husband is far too stingy when it comes to money and doesn't believe in spending enough on just enjoying life and having fun. I also resent not having more personal freedom and control when it comes to money. My dreams within this conflict might be... Husband. I think that my wife is impractical when it comes to money and spends far too thoughtlessly and selfishly. My dreams within this conflict might be... Couple 6. Wife. My husband likes to stay in much closer touch with our families than I do. To me, family connections are great sources of stress and disappointment. I have broken away from my family, and I want much greater distance. My dreams within this conflict might be... Husband. I like to stay in much closer touch with my family than my wife does. To me, family connections are very important. She wants greater independence from our families than I do. My dreams within this conflict might be... Sample dreams. Couple 3. Husband. I really do not flirt, nor do I have any interest in anyone but my spouse. It's just that parties are my only way of really satisfying my gregarious and wild side. I really don't want to be responsible for anyone else when I go to a party. My dream is to feel the freedom to explore. Wife. I have always wanted to be able to feel that I was enough for someone special in my life. That is my dream, to feel truly attractive and desirable to my partner. I want my partner to be interested in me, in knowing me, in finding out what I think, wanting to know what I am like inside. I would find it incredibly romantic if I could go to a party with my husband and he didn't even notice that there was anyone else there, had eyes only for me, and was totally satisfied spending hours in rapt conversation and dancing with just me. Couple 4. Wife. I was sexually mistreated long ago. I had no control over this, and it was quite horrible, but it did happen. I know my partner is not to blame for many of the feelings I now have, but I feel that sex can be okay only if it is on my terms. In my marriage, there's been a lot of healing and gentleness, but I probably will never get over these feelings of having gone through a real trauma. My dream is to have sexual closeness on my terms only. Husband, my dream is to have my partner initiate sexual encounters with me and somehow be swept away by passion. I guess to really be totally attracted to me. I know I'm not especially much to look at, but on some days I'm not too bad. I periodically want my partner to feel that I am simply irresistible. Couple 5. Wife. Life is too short to just save for the future all the time. I know that a certain amount of that is necessary, but but I want to have some sense that I am not living just for tomorrow. I don't want to feel that life is passing me by. And that's what I often feel, that I am not special enough to waste money on. I want to feel special and very alive. Where this comes from, I suppose, always having to scrimp when I was poor. But now I make a good income, and I don't have to live like that anymore. Husband, I want to enjoy life, but within limits. To me, the problem with the world is greed. People never seem to have enough stuff or get enough money. Just look at Americans on vacation, with all their things, campers, motorcycles, boats, cars. I don't want to want things. I want to be satisfied with just a small amount of things and a small amount of money. I honestly don't need very much to be happy. So I see myself as kind of like a monk who has a purpose in life. And I do have that. A monk can be satisfied with very little, contented, counting all the blessings in life, and there are so many. So I believe in saving and spending very little. To me, that's how one should lead a moral life. Where does this come from? I think it comes from my father, who also was very frugal. Thanks to him, our family always did well, and when he died, my mom was well provided for. I respect what he accomplished. Couple 6. Wife, it took me a great deal of effort to get away from a very dysfunctional family. My parents were very cold and distant. My sister wound up in a mental hospital, and my brother became a drug addict. I was the only one who escaped. I escaped by becoming very distant from my family and becoming very close to my friends. Friendships have always meant a lot to me and continue to be very important. But I am wary of being close to my husband's family. I see a lot of dysfunctional patterns and they scare me. My dream is for us to form our own family traditions and maintain our own independence. Husband, to me, a feeling of an extended family has always been very important. I can recall many a Sunday when my mother would have 20 or 30 family members visit. The coffee and pastries would keep coming all afternoon, and there would be lots of good stories and card playing and lots of laughter. Then there would be great food for dinner. Even during the hard times, my mother was always able to stretch the soup, and it stayed thick and hearty. My dream is to have this family feeling of community, closeness, and great comfort in my own family. Step 2. Work on a gridlocked marital issue. Now that you have had some practice uncovering dreams, try it with your own marriage. Choose a particular gridlocked conflict to work on. Then write an explanation of your position. Don't criticize or blame your spouse. Use the statements made by the couples above as your guide. Notice that they don't badmouth each other. Instead, they focus on what each partner needs, wants, and is feeling about the situation. Next, write the story of the hidden dreams that underlie your position. Explain where these dreams come from and why they are so meaningful to you. Once you both understand which dreams are fueling the gridlock, it's time to talk about them. Each person gets 15 minutes as the speaker and 15 minutes as the listener. Do not try to solve this problem. Attempting to do that now is likely to backfire. Your goal is simply to understand why each of you feels so strongly about this issue. Speaker's job. Talk honestly about your position and what it means to you. Describe the dream that's fueling it. Explain where the dream comes from and what it symbolizes. Be clear and honest about what you want and why it is so important. Talk as if you were explaining your dream to a good friend or neutral third party. Don't try to censor or downplay your feelings about your dream in order to avoid hurting or arguing with your spouse. If you find this difficult, review the advice in Chapter 8 about softening the startup. Some of the same approaches hold, namely, to make I statements and to talk only about your feelings and your needs. This is not the time to criticize or argue with your partner. How you feel about your spouse in relationship to this dream is a satellite issue that should not be addressed right now. Listener's job. Suspend judgment. Listen the way a friend would listen. Don't take your spouse's dream personally, even though it clashes with one of yours. Don't spend your time thinking up rebuttals or ways to solve the problem. Your role now is just to hear the dream and to encourage your spouse to explore it. Here are some supportive questions to ask. You don't have to use these verbatim. Put the thought and spirit behind them into your own words. Tell me the story of that. I'd like to understand what it means to you. What do you believe about this issue? What do you feel about it? What do you want? What do you need? What do these things mean to you? Don't. Georgia, I've always dreamed of going on a mountain climbing expedition to Mount Everest. Nathan, first of all, we can't possibly afford something like that. Besides, I can't think of anything more stressful than mountain climbing. I get vertigo standing on a table. Georgia, forget it. Do. Georgia, I've always dreamed of going on a mountain climbing expedition to Mount Everest. Nathan, tell me more about what it means to you to climb a mountain. What would it do for you? Georgia, I think I would feel exhilarated, like I was at the top of the world. As a child, I was always told that I was weak and couldn't do anything. My parents were always saying, "Careful, careful." I think climbing a mountain would be the most liberating thing I could do. I'd feel such a sense of accomplishment. If you can, tell your partner that you support his or her dream. That doesn't necessarily mean that you believe the dream can or should be realized. There are three different levels of honoring your partner's dreams, all of which are beneficial to your marriage. The first is to express understanding of the dream and be interested in learning more about it, even though you don't share it. For example, Nathan could support Georgia's decision to take a course in mountain climbing and listen with enthusiasm when she talks about it. The second level would be to offer financial support for her dream. This would mean helping Georgia finance a mountain climbing trip. The third level would be to become a part of the dream, to come to enjoy mountain climbing himself. Acknowledging and respecting each other's deepest, most personal hopes and dreams is the key to saving and enriching your marriage. You may find that you're able to go all the way with some of your partner's dreams, while with others, you can't get past the first level of understanding and interest. That's okay. The bottom line in getting past gridlock is not necessarily to become a part of each other's dreams, although your marriage will be more enriched to the extent that you can, but to honor these dreams. After all, you don't want the kind of marriage in which you triumph at the expense of crushing your partner. Step 3. Soothe each other. Discussing dreams that are in opposition can be stressful. Since you'll accomplish nothing if either of you becomes flooded, take a break for some soothing before you attempt to slog through the gridlock. Refer to the exercises in Chapter 8. Step 4. End the gridlock. Now it's time to begin the ongoing task of making peace with this issue, accepting the differences between you, and establishing some kind of initial compromise that will help you continue to discuss the problem amicably. Understand that your purpose is not to solve the conflict. It will probably never go away completely. Instead, the goal is to declaw the issue, to try to remove the hurt so the problem stops being a source of great pain. The way you start this process is by using the circle exercise, Finding Common Ground, in Chapter 8. You define the minimal core areas that you cannot yield on. To do this, you need to look deep into your heart and try to separate the issue into two categories. In one, put those aspects of the issue that you absolutely cannot give on without violating your basic needs or core values. In the second category, put all aspects of the issue where you can be flexible, because they are not so hot for you. Try to make the second category as large as possible, and the first category as small as possible. Share your two lists with your spouse. Working together and using the skills you learned in Chapter 8, come up with a temporary compromise. Try it for about 2 months, and then review where you stand. Don't expect this to solve the problem, only to help you both live with it more peacefully. For example, Sally believes in living for the moment. She tends to be spontaneous and loose with her money. Gus's main goal in life is to feel secure. He moves slowly and carefully toward decisions and is very frugal. These differences lead them to clash when Sally insists that they buy a mountain cabin. Gus immediately says no, they can't afford it. Sally feels confident that they can. For a year, they gridlock over this issue. Whenever they try to discuss it, they become embroiled in a shouting match. Gus lets Sally know he considers her an irresponsible dreamer who always wants to squander the money he works so hard to earn. Sally accuses Gus of wanting to squash all the fun and joy out of her life. To overcome the gridlock, Gus and Sally first have to explore the symbolic meaning of their positions on the cabin. In their first conversation to try to work on this issue, Sally says that her dreams are to pursue pleasure, to be able to truly relax, and to feel unity with nature, all of which she can realize by having a cabin. Although she also fears that Gus wants to turn her into a drone who's living just for tomorrow, she doesn't say this to him now. She said it frequently in the past. Instead, she focuses on what she desires, not her anger and fears connected to Gus. When it's Gus's turn to talk, he tells her that saving money has a lot of symbolic meaning for him. He longs to feel financially secure because he fears being destitute in his old age. He remembers seeing his grandparents suffering because they were so poor. His grandfather ended up in a state-run nursing home that Gus believes took away his dignity. One of his big goals in life is not to feel humiliated when he is old. Gus is also furious at Sally because he believes she is reckless and has a childish need for immediate gratification, which is a threat to his well-being and the life he's trying to build for both of them. However, he doesn't hurl those accusations at her this time. Instead, he sticks to explaining and describing his dream of financial security and its roots in his childhood. Once Sally and Gus have discussed the symbolic meaning of their positions, a transformation takes place. Rather than seeing each other's dreams as threats, they see them for what they are. Deep desires held by someone they love. Although their dreams are still in opposition, they are now motivated to find some common ground, to find a way to respect and perhaps even accommodate both of them. Here's how they do this. 1. They define the minimal core areas that they cannot yield on. Sally says she must have a cabin. Gus says he must save $30,000 in order to feel financially secure. 2. They define their areas of flexibility. Sally says she can settle for a small cabin on just a couple of acres rather than the larger retreat she had envisioned. She can also be flexible on the timing of acquiring a cabin. She would like to buy one right now, but can wait a few years as long as she feels Gus supports the decision and they work toward it together. Gus says he can be flexible about how quickly he must save his $30,000, as long as he knows that they are consistently working toward that goal by saving a specific amount from each of their paychecks. 3. They devise a temporary compromise that honors both of their dreams. They will buy a small cabin, but not for another 3 years. Meanwhile, they will devote half of their savings to a down payment and half to a mutual fund. In a couple of months, they will review this plan and decide if it's working. Sally and Gus realize that their underlying perpetual problem will never go away. Sally is always going to be the visionary, having ideas for things like cabins and great trips, and Gus is going to worry about their financial security, their retirement fund, and so on. But by learning how to cope with their differences, they can avoid gridlock on any specific conflicts their fundamental differences trigger. Here are a few other examples, using some of the couples from the Detecting Dreams exercise above, that show how you can learn to live with your differences through this process. While none of these conflicts are likely to mirror yours exactly, they should give you an idea of how couples with entrenched differences of opinion can overcome gridlock. Couple 1. Gridlock problem. House cleaning. She wants him to be neater. He wants her to leave him alone about it. The dream or dreams within the conflict. Hers. A sense of order and security at home. His, a sense of freedom in his own home. Non-negotiable areas. Hers, she can't abide dirty dishes left out in the kitchen or a dirty bathroom. His, he can't abide having to clean up his papers right after he's finished with them. Areas of flexibility. She can live with some clutter as long as there isn't any dirt. He can cope with cleaning dishes and bathrooms as long as he doesn't have to straighten up all the time. Temporary compromise. They will both take responsibility for keeping bathrooms and kitchens clean. She will not bug him about his clutter more than once a week. But if he doesn't deal with it by then, she will pile it up and put it all on the floor of his home office. Ongoing conflict. She will always hate clutter. He will always hate orderliness. Couple 2. Gridlocked problem. Very different comfort levels with expressing emotions. The dream or dreams within the conflict. Hers. Being emotional is part of her self-identity and part of what gives meaning to her life. His, he sees being emotional as a weakness. Non-negotiable areas. Hers, she cannot stop reacting with great passion to life. His, he cannot become a highly emotional person just to please her. Areas of flexibility. They both accept that their spouse cannot change a basic personality trait. Temporary compromise. They will be respectful of each other's difference in this area. He will be receptive to her need to talk about and share feelings. She will accept when he cannot do this. Ongoing conflict. They will continue to have very different approaches to expressing emotion. Couple 3. Gridlock problem. He enjoys spending time with other people at parties, while she wants him to stay with her. The dream or dreams within the conflict. His, to feel free and be able to explore by meeting new people at social events. Hers, to be the center of his attention. Non-negotiable areas. His, he must have the freedom to enjoy himself and meet new people. Hers, she cannot abide her husband dancing with other women or touching them, even in a friendly way. Areas of flexibility. His, he doesn't have to be completely separate from his wife at parties. Hers, she can tolerate her husband talking with other women for a few minutes. Temporary compromise. They will stay together at parties for about half the time. The other half, he can go off and mingle by himself. But he will not dance with or touch other women, and if she tells him she's upset by his behavior, he'll stop. Ongoing conflict. He will always want to socialize. She will always wish he would pay attention just to her. Now see if you can outline your own problem in the same way. First, write a clear statement of what the problem is and which dream or dreams of each of yours is fueling it. Then note which areas are non-negotiable for each of you and which you are able to be flexible about. Finally, write out a temporary compromise that you agree to try for a brief period of time. It will be helpful if you also write a brief description of your ongoing conflict to confirm that you both understand it remains unresolved but can be lived with. Step 5. Say thank you. It may take more than one session to overcome gridlock on issues that have been deeply troubling to your marriage. These sessions can be stressful, no matter how diligently you attempt to accept each other's viewpoint without judgment. To finish on a positive note, try to recreate the spirit of thanksgiving, in which you count your blessings and look inward to express gratitude for all you have. Come up with 3 things you really appreciate about your spouse, and tell your spouse what these 3 things are. This can be as simple as a statement like, "I really like the way you are sensitive to my moods." This may be particularly difficult to do after talking about gridlocked marital conflict, but that's all the more reason to try. Follow these 5 steps, and you'll be able to move out of gridlock on your perpetual problems. Be patient with the process and each other. By their very nature, these problems are tenacious. To loosen their grip on your marriage will take commitment and faith on both your parts. You'll know you're making progress when the issue in question feels less loaded to you both, when you can discuss it with your sense of humor intact, and it no longer looms so large that it crowds out the love and joy in your relationship. 11. Principle 7. Create shared meaning. "We used to have a yuppie marriage," says Helen. "By that, I mean it was very superficial. We got along okay and really loved each other, but I didn't feel that connected to Kevin. It was like we were roommates who made love." Helen, who calls herself a devout feminist, has always prided herself on her independence. At first, she thought it was great that she and Kevin had their own lives, their own careers, interests, and friends. But the longer they were married, and especially after they had children, the more she felt something was lacking. She didn't want to give up her strong sense of individual identity, but she wanted more from her marriage. After attending our workshop, she realized what it was. She wanted to feel more like she and Kevin were a family. If your marriage adheres to my first 6 principles, there's a good chance that your relationship is stable and happy. But if you find yourself asking, "Is that all there is?" your situation may be similar to Helen and Kevin's. What may be missing is a deeper sense of shared meaning. Marriage isn't just about raising kids, splitting chores, and making love. It can also have a spiritual dimension that has to do with creating an inner life together, a culture rich with symbols and rituals and an appreciation for your roles, and goals that link you, that lead you to understand what it means to be a part of the family you've become. Usually when we think of culture, we think in terms of large ethnic groups or even countries where particular customs and cuisine prevail. But a culture can also be created by just two people who have agreed to share their lives. In essence, each couple and each family create its own microculture. And like other cultures, these small units have their customs, like Sunday dinner out, rituals, like a champagne toast after the birth of each baby, and myths, the stories the couple tell themselves, whether true, false, or embellished, that explain their sense of what their marriage is like, what it means to be a part of their group. Paula and Doug viewed themselves as the runts of their respective families. Both were considered the least intelligent, attractive, or likely to succeed of their siblings. But as it turned out, all of their brothers and sisters ended up unmarried or divorced, while Paula and Doug formed a happy, stable marriage, held steady jobs, and raised great kids in a nice home. Part of their marriage's culture, the story they tell themselves about themselves, is what a great team they make, how feisty they are, how they thumb their noses at all the naysayers and succeeded against the odds. Developing a culture doesn't mean a couple sees eye to eye on every aspect of their life's philosophy. Instead, there is a meshing. They find a way of honoring each other's dreams, even if they don't always share them. The culture that they develop together incorporates both of their dreams, and it is flexible enough to change as husband and wife grow and develop. When a marriage has this shared sense of meaning, conflict is much less intense, and perpetual problems are unlikely to lead to gridlock. It is certainly possible to have a stable marriage without sharing a deep sense of what is meaningful about your lives together. Your marriage can work even if your dreams aren't in sync. The last chapter showed you just how to navigate your way around perpetual problems so that you can live with them rather than ending up gridlocked. It is important to accept that you each will probably have some dreams that the other doesn't share but can respect. You may, for example, adhere to different religions, but have enough respect for each other's spiritual journey to bridge the differences in your faiths. But it is also true that a rewarding marriage is about more than sidestepping conflict. The more you can agree about the fundamentals in life, the richer, more meaningful, and in a sense easier your marriage is likely to be. You certainly can't force yourselves to have the same deeply held views, but some coming together on these issues is likely to occur naturally if you are open to each other's perspectives. A crucial goal of any marriage, therefore, is to create an atmosphere that encourages each person to talk honestly about his or her convictions. The more you speak candidly and respectfully with each other, the more likely there is to be a blending of your sense of meaning. At our workshop, Helen and Kevin were able to focus on the spiritual side of their lives together by talking over some of the questions you'll find later in this chapter. For the first time, they spoke earnestly about their own families, their family histories, values, and symbols. When they returned home, Helen took out her family's old photo album and showed Kevin pictures of her great-grandparents who had come to America from Ireland. She told him the story she had heard countless times about her great-grandparents' marriage, how they had become engaged before her great-grandfather left for America. He then remained true and devoted to her great-grandmother during the 4 long years it took to save up enough money to bring her over too. The message of this story, she had come to understand, was that loyalty is one of the backbones of marriage and family life. Until now, she had never expressed that to Kevin so directly. He himself reminisced about some of his own family tales, especially about his grandmother, who single-handedly ran a general store in rural Kansas and almost went broke because she was always giving away free food to poor neighbors during the Depression. The townspeople all knew that she reserved a certain amount of her goods for the town's needy families, who would come by every Monday night at closing time. "My dad always said that we Monahans tend to be generous to the point of being foolish," he told Helen. "But he always said it in a way that let you know he was very proud that we were like that." Kevin told Helen how that perspective had infused his own adulthood. from his insistence that they make large charitable contributions to the size of the Christmas tips he gave out. That conversation marked a turning point in Kevin and Helen's marriage. From then on, they talked frequently about values like loyalty and generosity that had been instilled in them by hearing family stories as children. Over time, as they heard each other's family stories and passed them on to their children, each other's stories became their stories too, the stories of the new family that they had created. Helen accepted and incorporated the stories and values of the Monahans that were important to Kevin into her own life, and he did the same for her heritage. As I said, the more shared meaning you can find, the deeper, richer, and more rewarding your relationship will be. Along the way, you'll also be strengthening your marital friendship, as emphasized in my first three principles of a happy marriage. This, in turn, will make it even easier to cope with any conflicts that crop up. That's the beauty of the seven principles. They form a feedback loop that ensures that as you work on each principle, it becomes easier to work on the others. Shared Meaning Questionnaire. To get a sense of how well you and your partner create a sense of shared meaning in your lives together, answer the following questions. Your rituals of connection. 1. We see eye to eye about the rituals that involve family dinner times in our home. True or false? 2. Holiday meals, like Thanksgiving, Christmas, Passover, are very special and happy times for us. Or, we both hate them. True or false? 3. End-of-the-day reunions in our home are generally special times. True or false? 4. We see eye-to-eye about the role of TV in our home. True or false? 5. Bedtimes are generally good times for being close. True or false? 6. During the weekends, we do a lot of things together that we enjoy and value. True or false? 7. We have the same values about entertaining in our home, having friends over, parties, and so on. True or false? 8. We both value, or both dislike, special celebrations, like birthdays, anniversaries, family reunions. True or false? 9. When I become sick, I feel taken care of and loved by my spouse. True or false? 10. I really look forward to and enjoy our vacations and the travel we do together. True or false? 11. Spending our morning time together is special to us. True or false? 12. When we do errands together, we generally have a good time. True or false? 13. We have ways of becoming renewed and refreshed when we are burned out or fatigued. True or false? Scoring. Give yourself 1 point for each true answer. If you score below 3, your marriage could stand some improvement in this area. Be sure to work together on exercise 1, which follows this questionnaire. Your roles. 14. We share many similar values in our roles as husband and wife. True or false? 15. We share many similar values in our roles as mother and father. True or false? 16. We have many similar views about what it means to be a good friend to others. True or false? 17. My partner and I have compatible views about the role of work in one's life. True or false? 18. My partner and I have similar philosophies about balancing work and family life. True or false? 19. My partner supports what I would see as my basic mission in my life. True or false? 20. My partner shares my views on the importance of family and kin, sisters, brothers, moms, dads, in our life together. True or false? Scoring, give yourself 1 point for each true answer. If you score below 3, your marriage could stand some improvement in this area. Be sure to work together on exercise 2, which follows this questionnaire. Your goals. 21. We share many of the same goals in our life together. True or false? 22. If I were to look back on my life in very old age, I think I would see that our paths had meshed very well. True or false? 23. My partner values my accomplishments. True or false? 24. My partner honors the personal goals I have that are unrelated to our marriage. True or false? 25. We share many of the same goals for others who are important to us. Children, kin, friends, and community. True or false? 26. We have very similar financial goals. True or false? 27. We tend to have compatible worries about potential financial disasters. True or false? 28. Our hopes and aspirations as individuals and together, for our children, for our life in general, and for our old age, are quite compatible. True or false? 29. Our life dreams tend to be similar or compatible. True or false? 30. Even when different, we have been able to find a way to honor our life dreams. True or false? Scoring. Give yourself 1 point for each true answer. If you score below 3, your marriage could stand some improvement in this area. Be sure to work together on exercise 3, which follows this questionnaire. Your symbols. 31. We see eye to eye about what home means. True or false? 32. Our philosophies of what love ought to be are quite compatible. True or false? 33. We have similar values about the importance of peacefulness in our lives. True or false? 34. We have similar values about the meaning of family. True or false? 35. We have similar views about the role of sex in our lives. True or false? 36. We have similar views about the role of love and affection in our lives. True or false? 37. We have similar values about the meaning of being married. True or false? 38. We have similar values about the importance and meaning of money in our lives. True or false? 39. We have similar values about the importance of education in our lives. True or false? 40. We have similar values about the importance of fun and play in our lives. True or false? 41. We have similar values about the significance of adventure. True or false? 42. We have similar values about trust. True or false? 43. We have similar values about personal freedom. True or false? 44. We have similar values about autonomy and independence. True or false? 45. We have similar values about sharing power in our marriage. True or false? 46. We have similar values about being interdependent, being a we. True or false? 47. We have similar values about the meaning of having possessions, of owning things, like cars, nice clothes, books, music, a house, and land. True or false? 48. We have similar values about the meaning of nature and of our relationship to the seasons. True or false? 49. We are both sentimental and tend to reminisce about things in our past. True or false? 50. We have similar views about what we want in retirement and old age. True or false? Scoring. Give yourself 1 point for each true answer. If you score below 3, your marriage could stand some improvement in this area. Be sure to work together on exercise 4, which follows this questionnaire. The following exercises are really just a list of questions for you both to answer and discuss. They are divided into the 4 categories that usually form the basis of shared meaning between husband and wife. Rituals, roles, goals, and symbols. These questionnaires are not designed to be completed in an evening or even a month. Consider them starting off points for many future discussions and fireside chats. To make the best use of these questions, focus on them one at a time. You can even write your thoughts about the question in your notebook. Then read each other's entries and discuss the question face to face. Talk about your differences on this issue, as well as your areas of common ground, areas that you can build upon. Find ways to honor both of your values, philosophies, and dreams. Although in many areas you may have separate needs, find ways to be supportive of each other's. Where you differ fundamentally, find ways of being respectful, of honoring the differences between you. If this leads to an argument, work through the exercises and the chapters concerning principles 4, 5, and 6, even if you've already done so. Write out, if you like, your own family constitution, what you agree on about meaning and shared philosophy of life. Family rituals. It is a sad fact that less than a third of U.S. families eat dinner together regularly, and more than half of those that do have the television on during dinner. This effectively ends conversation during dinner. Creating informal rituals when you can connect emotionally is critical in a marriage. Midnight Mass on Christmas Eve, lighting Kwanzaa candles or the menorah, Thanksgiving at grandma's, family reunions. Most of us were raised in families in which some rituals were considered important. By making them a part of your married life, or coming up with your own new ones together, they become your rituals as well, and further your identity as a family. Jesse came from a very close-knit, extended family on his father's side, the Feldmans. From the time he was a little boy, the photographer at all of their family weddings was asked to spend a few minutes rounding up all 50 or so Feldmans for the Feldman photo. Every member of his father's family, along with their spouses and children, would gather together, the bride and groom seated in the middle. As a youngster, Jesse would roll his eyes and think posing for the photo was a big joke. But when he fell in love with and married Amanda, the ritual of the Feldman photo took on a new meaning for him. Suddenly, he was the groom sitting in the chair surrounded by his family. Now every time he looks at the Feldman photo in his own wedding album, he feels a sense of pride and connection, knowing that Amanda has really joined his family. This feeling has been reinforced over the years, every time he attends another Feldman wedding and he and Amanda pose along with the rest of the clan. Rituals don't necessarily have to derive from your respective childhoods and family histories. You can create your own. New rituals might come from a sense of what your family lacked. If you wished your family had gone on outings together on the weekends, you may want to incorporate that into your weekly routine. Or if you wish a bigger deal had been made out of the spiritual side of Christmas, you may decide to attend midnight mass together every year. Sometimes rituals that don't seem quite so momentous can be important for a family. Nick and Hallie, for example, always celebrate family birthdays by baking a cake together. This ritual started when their son, who was then a toddler, was allergic to eggs, so they were unable to buy birthday cakes at the bakery. Over the years, their son got over his allergy, but the family ritual remained, because it had become meaningful to them. It gave them a chance to come together and celebrate their family and the birthday in a very quiet, homey way. Exercise 1, Rituals. In the following exercise, create your own family ritual of connection by talking about what you want. Discuss what these rituals, or lack of rituals, were like for you growing up, what the best times and the disasters were like for you. Then script your ritual so you will know who is expected to do what and when. Make these rituals something you do regularly and can look forward to. 1. How do we, or should we, eat together at dinner? What is the meaning of dinner time? What was dinner time like in each of our families growing up? 1. How should we part at the beginning of each day? What was this like in our families growing up? How should our reunions be? 3. How should bedtime be? What was it like in our families growing up? How do we want this time to be? 4. What is the meaning of weekends? What were they like in our families growing up? What should they be like now? 5. What are our rituals about vacations? What were they like in our families growing up? What should they mean now? 6. Pick a meaningful holiday. What is the true meaning of this holiday to us? How should it be celebrated this year? How is it celebrated in each of our families growing up? 7. How do we each get refreshed and renewed? What is the meaning of these rituals? 8. What rituals do we have when someone is sick? What was this like in our families growing up? How should it be in our family? Sociologist William Dougherty emphasized the importance of rituals of connection in families. He and his wife Leah created the tradition of after-dinner coffee in which their children played or did homework while he and his wife had coffee and talked. They all cleaned up after dinner, then Bill made coffee and brought it out to Leah in the living room. It was a time of peace and connection. You can continue building in family rituals of connection you would cherish by creating the following. A weekly date for the two of you away from the children. Celebrations of triumph,